and the inexperienced when sailors with catastrophic injuries regained consciousness and seemed to improve. When infection set in, everything flipped. Weak smiles turned to screams. Optimism turned to horror and pity. Without a hospital, Harvey would suffer right up until the end. Do we have anything? Larkin knew where Colt was going. He'd been in combat as gritty and violent as anything Colt had experienced. Not even a bottle of whiskey.
It's not going to be easy.
Nothing will. Larkin stretched his feet out in front of him and let his shoulders sag. If you haven't noticed, we lost all the food. Colt raised his head. He'd been so focused on the Wilkins family, he'd not stopped to think about the living.
All of it?
We packed it all in the pickup. As soon as the Camaro hit it, the garbage bags went flying. Everything canned exploded on contact with the road. The potatoes splattered. The water jugs burst. He shook his head. We might be able to salvage a handful of oranges, but...
They were almost rotten to begin with.
Larkin nodded. Colt glanced up at the darkening sky.
So, we're up Shit Creek.
Without a paddle. No food. No water. A handful of bullets and a man too injured to move. Not a recipe for success. Colt didn't know what to do. Ordinarily, he was a take-charge kind of guy. A problem was a challenge to solve, not an insurmountable obstacle. But he'd never been faced with something so grim. Missions ended. They failed or succeeded, and he was either extracted or they'd recover his body. But there was always someone out there somewhere who had his back. Not this time. They were on their own. No stores, no aid, no government to help them. Colt, Larkin, Danny, and the Harpers would live or die on the backs of their wits and strength. Nothing more. He pushed himself off the ground, wincing with the effort.
How much farther can the Humvee go?
Larkin stood and focused on the tan beast of a vehicle. Not more than 50 miles, I'd say.
Great.
Add no real transportation to their list of bad news.
Then I guess we're making camp.
We can all pile in the Humvee for the night to stay warm. Set out in the morning. Harvey won't fit. One of us will have to stay with him and keep watch.
There isn't any way to get him in there?
Moving him is a bad idea. If his back is broken...
Colt held up a hand. He knew the drill. Then we need shelter, and we need it fast. There are enough trees around here. We can strip some branches and make a lean-to.
Larkin nodded. I'll ask Doug to help. As he turned toward the woods, Danny caught his eye. She lurched toward them, half carrying, half dragging a duffel bag along behind her. She stopped in front of them both and dumped the bag on the ground.
What's in the bag?
She wrapped a hand around her middle as she sucked in a few lungfuls of air.
Open it.
Larkin crouched and unzipped the bag.
Whoa. You see this, Colt?
Colt bent to inspect the contents.
There have to be 20 guns in there.
He counted a dozen Glocks of various sizes, an armful of rifles beneath them, even a few defensive shotguns for good measure. He stood up in a rush, and the ground wobbled.
Where did you find these?
Danny jerked her thumb toward the smashed-up car.
In the back seat of the bastard that hit you? There's 4 more just like it still in there. A bunch of ammo boxes, too.
Colt met Larkin's heavy stare.
They were thinking the same thing.
No one transported this much weaponry by themselves. A few dozen guns and hundreds of rounds of ammo? Not a chance. The dead man in the Camaro was now a much bigger problem.
Get Doug to help you unload the car. Take all the duffels and ammo boxes to the Humvee and load them in the back.
What are you going to do?
Colt and Larkin stood up at the same time.
Figure out the best way to get rid of the evidence.
Danny scrunched her eyebrows.
I don't understand.
Larkin filled her in. Someone right now was wondering where the hell their guns are at. That man wasn't driving an arsenal at 100 miles an hour because he needed to get some fresh air. He was meeting someone.
Colt nodded. And now he's late.
The implication washed over Danny's face, and she paled.
They'll be looking for him.
Exactly. If we don't hide the car, we'll be sitting ducks.
We should just pack up and go. We can cram everything in the Humvee and hit the road.
Harvey can't travel.
Danny's eyes went wide.
We can't stay here. If someone is coming to find this guy, we'll be right in their path.
Colt rubbed the back of his neck. We've got plenty of defenses now. We'll be all right.
You can't be serious.
About what?
Doug stopped next to Danny. He almost jumped when he spotted the duffel of guns at their feet.
What the hell is that?
Larkin motioned at the crashed car. The asshole's payload. Doug glanced at the Camaro and back at Larkin.
He was a weapons smuggler?
Transporter, at least. Doug's gaze bounced back and forth between the guns and Colt and Larkin.
We need to leave. Whoever wants those weapons will be coming.
What about Harvey?
Doug whipped his head toward his sister and Harvey's unconscious form.
If we move him, he'll die.
It was as bad as Colt feared. If they stayed, they would be sitting ducks. If they left, they would be condemning Harvey to death. He focused on Doug's face as he asked the only important question. Does Harvey have any chance of pulling through? Doug didn't hesitate.
Yes, he does.
The answer surprised him. If there was a chance, Colt made up his mind. I'll stay here with Harvey. The rest of you pack up and move out.
No way.
Danny crossed her arms.
I'm staying too.
Larkin chimed in. The kid's right. I'm not leaving you here to get yourself killed.
We can't leave. If whoever wants those guns does show up, you're a sitting duck. Instead of saving Harvey, you'll be killing both of you.
Doug's lips thinned.
We all stay until Harvey is safe enough to travel.
Colt exhaled. He didn't like the idea one bit. We'll need shelter. A lean-to big enough for at least Harvey and one other person. There might be a tarp from the truck or branches we can use.
We can move the Humvee into the trees, add some branches to camouflage it.
What about the car?
Danny chewed on her lip as she waited for Colt's answer. So young, but so capable. He ran a hand down his face. Can you unload it? She nodded. Good. Get everything out, and we'll push it down the road. I've got an idea. Colt didn't like staying. It was setting them up for an ambush. He hoped his plan would put whoever came looking off their trail, but he didn't have a lot of faith. If it didn't work, they'd be forced to run or take a stand.
Day 33. Chapter 19. Melody. Highway 58, Northwest California, 2 a.m. Her teeth banged together in a relentless chatter, and Melody hugged her sweater tighter against the chill. Harvey hadn't so much as groaned, despite the temperature dropping at least 20 degrees in the night. Melody didn't know what to do. She checked Harvey's pulse every 5 minutes, and confirmed his lungs still filled with air, but that was it. Without any drugs, she couldn't alleviate his discomfort, or ward off infection, or even reduce the swelling. His right ankle looked like a grapefruit, and she couldn't even ice it. A sob slipped out between her chattering teeth, and Melody shoved her fist against her mouth. What a naive fool I've been. She brushed her fingertips across Harvey's forehead. Still hot. At some point in the night, his body gave in to a fever. And now he radiated more heat than an electric blanket. It wasn't enough to keep her warm, but the cold air wasn't hurting him. Melody wiped at her face. Gloria and Will were dead. Doug and Larkin moved their bodies to a restful spot among the trees. But they weren't buried. Their lifeless forms just lay on the ground, open for birds and squirrels and mice to run all over. She closed her eyes, and the accident replayed in her mind. So fast and deadly. And now they were trapped 100 feet off the road in a makeshift camp, while Harvey struggled to keep breathing. They would never make it somewhere safe. They would never be comfortable again. Hunger roiled her belly, but Melody shoved it down. She couldn't think about food while Harvey died a slow and agonizing death before her eyes. The cut tree branches beside her rustled, and Lottie rushed in. The little dog jumped into Melody's arms as Larkin eased into the makeshift first aid tent.
Thought she could use some company. Melody tried to smile.
Thanks. He held out a cup full of steam.
Pine needle tea. It won't fill you up, but it'll curb your appetite.
She took it with a nod and wrapped her fingers around the mug.
Where'd you find this?
Larkin shrugged.
I've been scouring the forest for our gear. One box of dishes wasn't a complete loss. And I found a jug of water still half full. The mud slowed the leak.
He squeezed into the space between Melody and the wall.
The potatoes weren't so lucky.
Melody snorted.
You should get some sleep.
Can't. Colt snores like a beached walrus.
You're familiar with their sound?
Tons of them on the beach when I was stationed in Alaska. Real pains in the ass, too. Always complaining and barking orders.
He smiled.
Not that different from the army, now that I think about it.
Melody scowled.
How can you make jokes? Gloria and Will are dead. Harvey's barely hanging on. We've lost all our food, the Humvee is about to give up, and we're lost in the middle of nowhere.
Don't forget, we're hiding from a bunch of bad guys, too.
Melody punched Larkin in the arm.
I'm serious.
I am, too. Whoever ordered those guns isn't going to let a missing shipment go. They'll be coming.
Melody forced the question out.
What do we do?
As soon as Harvey can move, we leave.
You mean as soon as he's dead?
Larkin glanced at her, an unreadable expression on his face.
How long does he have?
I don't know.
Then we need to make the most of it.
He stretched his legs out in front of him and leaned back against a tree trunk.
Tell me your favorite memory of Harvey and Gloria.
Melody blinked.
Why?
Larkin reached out and gave her arm a squeeze.
Because Harvey's not dead yet, and maybe hearing about his life will help the man find his way home.
Melody glanced at Harvey. The man had been her neighbor for as long as she could remember. But a favorite memory? She thought in silence before it came to her. A small, sad smile tilted the corners of her mouth.
One year, when I was a teenager, Harvey asked if we could help him pick out a Christmas tree.
Larkin urged her to continue.
He had this tradition of traipsing up into the mountains around Eugene and cutting off the top of a Douglas fir.
Melody smiled.
He'd shimmy up that tree like a bear after honey. It was scary and funny and completely insane all at the same time.
Where do you come in?
One year Harvey hurt his back, slipped a disc or something. So he asked Doug to help. She sipped some tea and shook her head. So there is my city brother, 18 years old, with a saw and some brand new boots, traipsing through the December snow.
Larkin grinned.
Doug wasn't much for roughing it back then.
Still isn't.
She smiled and continued. Harvey picked some tree that had to be 40 feet tall. Doug took one look at it and his eyes went all wide and he turned to me.
Did you talk him out of it?
Melody stifled a quiet laugh.
I told him to get on with it. So he climbed the tree with the saw, got all the way up to 10 feet from the top, and hacked at it until the top came crashing down.
What's so funny about that?
Doug couldn't get down. He was like a treed cat up there, clinging to the trunk and howling. Harvey shook the tree and scared him so bad he shimmied down. Poor Doug pulled pine splinters out of his hands for a week.
By the time she finished the story, tears of laughter leaked from Melody's eyes. She smiled at Harvey's still body where he lay on the hood of the Camaro.
Did he ever ask Doug to help him again?
Not a chance.
She reached forward and rested her hand on Harvey's shoulder. After a minute, she found her voice.
Harvey's a good man. He deserves better than this.
Larkin nodded.
None of us expected to be here, Melody. We've done the best we could.
Have we?
She turned on him, tone more accusatory than she meant.
Is that really true?
She broke eye contact and focused again on Harvey.
When the power first went out, we did nothing. Just sat back and waited for help to arrive like it always did before. Then when Jarvis took over... Larkin shifted beside her.
You could have kept your head down, stayed with the militia. Maybe that would have been better.
And let them round me up to do God knows what down the road? She shook her head. The more I think about it, the more I'm convinced we should have left first thing. I've got friends in Washington State. We could have driven up there and hiked into Canada.
What makes you think it's better there than it is here?
The whole world can't be powerless. Someone somewhere has electricity.
Stop second-guessing yourself. What's done is done. You can't change the past.
Melody drained the rest of the tea. I can still be bitter about it.
Or you can think about the future.
Larkin took the empty mug and set it by the tree branch wall.
The world before the power went out is gone. We need to stop hoping for it to come back and start living now. This right here is what we have.
She snorted. A crappy lean-to, a dying man, and no food? He smiled.
I was thinking more a beautiful woman who has more strength and courage than she gives herself credit for.
Melody stilled. Larkin stared at her with an intensity she'd forgotten existed, and Melody wished they were anywhere else. You think I'm strong? He nodded.
And brave. Stop beating yourself up over what might have been, and focus on what you can do now.
It's not that easy.
Yes, it is.
Larkin reached out and trailed his fingers over Melody's cheek. She shuddered. He leaned forward. Melody's breath caught in her lungs like a bird in a net, wings unfurled, going nowhere. I don't think...
You're right. Don't think at all. Just act.
Larkin's lips hovered an inch away, and Melody's eyes slid shut. She waited, frozen in place as he closed the distance between them. A low, guttural growl broke the spell, and Melody jerked back. Lottie sat on her lap, ears pricked toward the road. Melody glanced up at Larkin in alarm. He held a finger in front of the lips she almost kissed. Lottie growled again, and Larkin rose onto his feet.
Don't move.
He checked the safety on the pistol he carried and ducked out from beneath the makeshift shelter. Melody stared at the empty space he left behind and shivered.
Chapter 20 Danny Highway 58, Northwest California, 3 a.m.
Danny, wake up!
Go away!
Danny swatted at the hand shaking her shoulder. It couldn't be morning already. A gust of cold air made her squirm.
Wake up! We need to move. There's someone coming.
Danny's eyes flew open. Larkin stood beside the open door to the Humvee, letting in cold air and panic. Reality stole her breath. The car crash. Gloria and Will and Harvey. The guns. She smacked her dry lips together. Where?
Same road as the Camaro, opposite direction.
How far?
Minutes.
Larkin glanced behind him.
We need better cover.
She sat up in the seat and rubbed the last bit of sleep from her eyes. Larkin handed her a rifle.
Find a tree and hide behind it.
He pointed at the road.
They're coming from the west. If they spot the Camaro, they'll come at us from this direction.
When do we engage?
Not until we've been spotted. If we're lucky, they'll drive right by us.
Danny didn't feel lucky. She clambered out of the Humvee and hit the ground with both feet. Where's Colt?
Scouting. Doug and Melody are pulling Harvey into some brush. I need you as another shooter. Can you handle it?
The faint hum of a motor pricked her ear.
Yeah. Good.
Larkin clapped her on the back and set off toward the crossroad. Danny loped into the trees. The night air clutched at her bare neck and she shivered. Leaves and branches smacked her face and clawed her jeans as she traipsed into a thicket of dense foliage. The forest smelled of damp earth and decaying logs, and she fought the urge to sneeze. With a full canopy of new leaves, the forest blocked most of the moon. Pale shafts of light filtered through the breaks in the forest. But Danny couldn't make out more than a few feet in any direction. She wouldn't be able to shoot anyone until they were almost on top of her. Not good. The low rumble of the car engine grew louder, and Danny strained to see the road. There! A flash of car headlights through the trees. She eased closer, heading in the direction of the lights. They came in and out of focus like a strobe as the car drove down the crossroad. The lights hugged the road, low and wide. Not a Humvee or even a truck. Maybe it was a friendly, innocent sedan. An unrelated driver, oblivious to the accident and the cache of guns in the Camaro. Maybe it wouldn't even slow down when it reached the state highway. Danny ducked behind a large tree trunk and waited 20 feet off the side of the crossroad. The glow from the headlights steadily increased. The twin lights bounced and weaved as they approached the intersection. Danny let herself hope. Keep going. Keep going. The headlights wavered and slowed. She cursed beneath her breath. The car stopped, its lights illuminating the intersection and the scene of the accident. Colt and Larkin had pushed the Camaro into the ditch, but they couldn't do anything to cover it up or hide the pickup. Colt had hoped it wouldn't be seen from the road, and any driver would cruise on by. Guess he was wrong. A low, throaty grumble spread through the forest from the car's idling engine as Danny waited. The driver's door opened with a squeal and slammed a moment later. A silhouette, stocky and solid, parted the beams of light. Danny shifted in her crouch. They could take on one man, even with Harvey injured and the light working against them. Another door opened. Another figure cut in front of a headlight. Bigger. Wider. Danny swallowed. It will be okay. She raised the rifle to her eye and took in the size and shape of the two men in the lights. Killing them now would be easy. 2 shots apiece and they would fall like leaves to cold asphalt. Her finger eased around the trigger. But she didn't pull. What if they were innocent? What if they were merely stopping to find a place to relieve themselves, or checking the wreck for survivors? What if the two men standing in the light could help them? Food, water, a place to sleep. She frowned. Would her first instinct now always be to shoot first and not bother with questions? Was that her life? Danny thought about her mother and her life before. When her mother was on a tear or a dealer was after her, Danny never stood up for herself. Instead of fighting back and taking charge, she ran and hid like a coward. She didn't have the strength to fight. Was shooting these men any different? It was still cowardice, still fear. She eased her finger off the trigger. With Colt and Larkin in the woods, they could survive even if the men on the street were out for vengeance. As she leaned back in her crouch, the driver stepped out of the headlights. Danny watched the beams of light until, bam, they disappeared. The forest plunged into darkness, inky thick and impossible to navigate. She stared at those stupid headlights for so long that without them she was blind. Danny cursed herself again. Stupid girl! She'd been so consumed with doing the right thing and all the what-ifs, she didn't stop to think about what would happen next. The night closed in around her, every sound amplified a million times. A cricket in the leaves at her feet, an owl half a mile away. A crunch of a twig, way too close to ignore. Danny froze. She couldn't run. She couldn't shoot. There was nothing to do but stay still and hope they couldn't see her. They could still be friendly. They could still be good people. Fear spiked her heart. It pounded loud enough to drown out the cricket and the owl and a million other sounds. But not the crunching leaves. not the snapping twigs. Someone was out there and headed straight for her. What if they caught her? She couldn't let that happen. Danny closed her eyes and breathed in the forest. Dank decay, fresh new leaves, grease and dirt. A person. She opened her eyes and focused on the smell and the sound. She wouldn't let them catch her. She would take them out, even if she couldn't see. Her finger twitched around the trigger as she pulled the butt of the rifle tight against her shoulder. Tree bark scraped her back through her clothes as she pressed herself against it. I won't die out here. Not now. Not like this.
Chapter 21. Colt. Highway 58, Northwest California, 3 a.m. The forest posed no obstacle to Colt in the darkness. His feet rolled over the leaves without a sound, his gun-toting arm tucked close and tight to his chest to avoid a surprise attack. The men standing around the Mustang idling on the road would never hear him above the engine noise. He eased close enough to assess the threat. Two men, one a beefy 200-plus pounds round from beer and inactivity, the other taller and better conditioned. From the way both men held shotguns draped across their non-shooting arms, they were skilled in firearm use. They stood in the beam of the headlights staring at the wrecked Camaro. Colt knew if someone came looking, they would find it. Dragging the driver's body into the brush had been the right call. Without his body, the men standing in the road didn't know if he'd crashed and run off with the guns himself, been kidnapped, or what. There could be a million different scenarios. They wouldn't know where to go or what to do. If they headed for the Humvee, Colt would take them out. Otherwise, he planned to leave them alone. Men stockpiling weapons could be useful in a lawless America. Colt didn't want to kill them unless he had a damn good reason. He stood behind a thick pine, waiting and listening. The passenger loped ahead to the wrecked Camaro and disappeared out of the headlight beam. A few minutes later, he clawed back out, shaking his head. If he said anything, Colt couldn't hear it. The driver stalked back to the car and reached inside the open window. The engine faded into silence. 30 seconds later, the headlights flicked off. Colt couldn't see, but neither could the two men. They were as blind as he was, maybe worse. Colt squeezed his eyes shut and used the palms of his hands to put pressure on his eyes. After a count to 10, he released his eyes and blinked back the startling white blindness. Not perfect, but the quick trick improved his vision substantially. The men had moved away from the car. Colt crept closer. Without the steady hum of the engine, he teased their whispers from the darkness.
You think Butch took off?
With all those guns? That boy couldn't carry a sack of potatoes 10 feet. How's he gonna lug 50 rifles?
Maybe he buried them.
Where?
He could have put them in the bushes. It's darker than the inside of a cow in that damn forest. He could have stashed them under a log or something.
We should go back and tell Cunningham. Let him decide what to do.
And get our asses chewed for not searching the area? You want to do that, go right ahead, but I'm checking it out.
With what?
There's a flashlight in the glove box. We can poke around, at least.
Colt frowned. So far, the men hadn't come across the smashed-up truck or the Humvee, but if they started traipsing around in the forest, they would find it. A car door opened, and the sounds of rummaging filtered back to Colt. He eased deeper into the forest, hoping to still catch the conversation but not be seen. A weak flashlight clicked on.
Man, this thing is a piece of crap. We'll never find anything with it.
Can't go back until we try. You know Cunningham. The minute he finds out the guns are gone, he'll flip.
What do we need them for anyway? Haven't we got enough?
He says there's never enough.
Whoever this Cunningham fellow was, Colt agreed with him. Guns, ammo, food, and water. The four things you could never have too much of. As the two men headed back toward the Camaro, Colt kept pace, slinking behind trees and bushes. The flashlight beam roved over the smashed-up car and the tree line beyond. The taller man broke the silence.
You think Cunningham's right?
About what?
All that talk about America being over, that this is the new world.
The whole We're explorers and can conquer any land we see fit.
Yeah, that.
The shorter man shuffled in and out of the light.
I don't know. Seems a bit kooky to me, but he's done all right, ain't he? We've got food and water, and so far no one's come to take it.
But what's he need all these weapons for? It don't make sense.
Defense. It must be.
I don't know. Hey, what's that?
The flashlight caught the dirty chrome of the pickup's smashed bumper. Both men readied their weapons and approached. The beam of light dipped into the ditch off the side of the road. Colt knew it was only a matter of time now. The odds of getting out of there without being spotted were rapidly decreasing. He could take the two men out, but he didn't want to unless he had no choice. Their conversation sparked more than interest. They had food and shelter and tons of weapons. This Cunningham fellow had managed to assemble what sounded like a pretty good setup. Joining a place like that could be the best option, assuming it was taking any more numbers. But he couldn't just walk out of the woods and ask. The two men were liable to shoot on sight. No. Colt needed to find out more about Cunningham and where he set up camp before he brought it up to the rest of the group. If this trek out of Eugene taught him anything, it was the need for more supplies, training, and people. With only five of them functional and Harvey on his last breath, they would never be able to start over with nothing. Even if he didn't stay in whatever makeshift town these men came from, Doug and Melody might be able to start over. They might find a little piece of what they lost. Colt closed the distance between him and the two men. The flashlight beam bounced around the cab of the truck, and Colt picked up their conversation.
Too much blood. No way somebody survived this.
Then where are the bodies?
Probably with our guns.
We need to get back and assemble a team to search. We can't do this on our own.
Colt backtracked into the forest. He needed to find Danny and the rest of them and explain what he heard. They could put following the men to a vote. A blob of light landed 3 feet from his boot and he froze.
You hear that?
Probably a deer or something.
No, man. It sounded like a person.
The light swooped over his left shoulder and Colt eased to the ground.
I'm gonna check it out.
The flashlight bobbed and weaved and Colt pressed closer to the damp forest floor. The light swooped over his back. If they spotted him, it was game over. He would have no choice but to engage.
Hey, I got something!
Shit.
Colt readied himself for a fight, but the flashlight beam arced away from him.
It's a military truck. I told you someone was out here.
Oh, no. As the light bounded toward the Humvee, Colt rose up. He turned and made his way toward the area Larkin had set up as a safety zone. They would need to hide until these idiots got sick of searching. A few feet ahead of him, a pale shape floated against a tree.
Colt squinted. Danny?
He eased closer. The teenager clutched a rifle tight to her body, swooping it back and forth. From the way it quivered, he knew she was terrified and blind. He whistled a faint, high-pitched note. She swiveled toward him. He took another step. The rifle hung in the air, ready to fire.
Danny!
The gun jerked.
Danny, it's Colt!
She lowered the weapon, and he stepped close enough for her to see him in the dark.
I almost shot you!
I'm glad you didn't. He motioned for her to crouch, and he did the same. The men found the Humvee. We need to distract them and get out of here.
How?
The sound of the Mustang revving caught them both off guard, and they spun toward the noise. The headlights flared, and the car revved before lurching forward. It spun a 180 as shouts erupted from the tree line. The two men charged the car as it shot off in the direction they had come. The headlights lit up the night as the car sped away. Colt tugged on Danny's arm. Let's go.
Where?
To the Humvee. Larkin's given us a chance.
What about him?
Don't worry. He'll find us. Colt and Danny took off for the vehicle. They made it just as Melody and Doug emerged from the trees, dragging Harvey behind.
What's going on?
Doug heaved the Camaro's hood closer to the Humvee as Colt yanked open the back door. Larkin's giving us a chance. Everyone in.
What about Harvey?
Colt glanced down at the unconscious man.
Get him in the back.
But if we move him...
We don't have a choice.
Danny rushed to the passenger door while Colt clambered up into the driver's seat. He flipped the switch on the dash and waited as Doug and Melody eased Harvey inside and shut the doors.
Colt turned on the Humvee. It sputtered and cranked, and for a moment he wondered if it would turn over. But at last, a weak grumble managed to hold. He eased it into the forest, turned on the headlights, and punched the accelerator. They'd be off-roading it from now on.
Chapter 22. Melody. Northern California Forest. 5 a.m. The Humvee spluttered and lurched. Melody fell against the door, and Harvey's limp body slid off the divider. His hand flopped into her lap. She braced herself as the vehicle straddled the ditch. This couldn't get any worse. The engine coughed and the Humvee seized up as it attempted to crest a hump in the forest. The tires slipped. Colt cursed from the front seat and revved the engine. But instead of moving forward, the Humvee rolled back. It stopped on level ground, engine hissing. He flipped the switch and pumped the gas. Nothing. Doug eased forward from the back. Is that it?
Afraid so.
Colt twisted around.
The engine is fried. Even if it cools, I don't think it will restart.
Melody reached for Harvey. His head had slid off the divider, and it lay at an unnatural angle, his eyes wide open and vacant. With two fingers, she searched for a pulse. Again and again, she moved her hand around his neck. Fear and denial rising in her throat the longer she searched. Her brother's hand wrapped around her own.
Mel.
She glanced up. Doug's eyes were full of knowledge and caring.
Is he gone?
I can't find a pulse. If we start CPR, maybe.
It's best to let him go.
She tore her gaze away from Doug and stared down at Harvey. This couldn't be happening. A month ago, they were all just living their lives. Friends and neighbors waving as they passed on the street, sipping coffee on the front porch on a lazy Saturday morning, chatting about the weather. Now Harvey was another casualty of this war without an enemy. A man who had already sacrificed his home and everything he owned for strangers to whom he didn't owe anything. It didn't seem fair. The Wilkins family was dead. For what? Tears pricked her eyes, and Melody didn't will them back. One tumbled from the middle of her lash line and splashed across Harvey's lifeless cheek. Gloria had been her friend her entire life, from babysitting when she could barely walk, to being a shoulder to cry on after her parents died. Now the woman's body was left to rot in the middle of a forest hundreds of miles from home. Harvey had been a friend to her father and to Doug. He deserved better than to die in the back of a Humvee, bouncing through underbrush and dry creek beds. He should be sitting at the kitchen table right now, drinking coffee and watching the sunrise. Melody snuffed back a sob. Her brother squeezed her hand, but she shook him off, anger welling up inside her to replace the grief. What are we doing out here? She looked up at Doug. He'd always been so confident before the power loss, taking charge and protecting her. Now what could he do? Sit there and stare while Colt figured out what to do next? Lottie yipped from Danny's lap. The poor dog hadn't eaten a decent meal in days, and spent the last night with nowhere to sleep except beside a dying man. Melody reached for her, and Lottie scrambled into her arms. If things continued down this path, soon she would be saying goodbye to Lottie, too. Colt spoke up from the front.
I'm sorry, Melody.
She snorted and wiped at her face. Are you really?
Mel.
What? She snorted at her brother. It's a legitimate question. Colt answered.
Of course I am.
Melody swallowed. Rage simmered below the surface of her body, writhing like a serpent kept too long in a cage. Rage at Colt for forcing their decision to leave Eugene. Rage at Jarvis for taking over the only town she'd ever really known. Rage at the U.S. government for their incompetence. If regular people had some warning,
If they knew what space weather could do. Maybe Melody would have prepared. Maybe they all would have. She wiped at her face again, smearing tears and dirt across her cheeks. How did we get here? Colt shrugged.
Drove through the forest, mostly. I've tried to head due south.
Doug snorted a laugh, but Melody couldn't shake her anger and hopelessness. Larkin wouldn't even be able to cheer her up now. The thought of him sent another pang of heartache lancing through her body. He would never find them now. What are we going to do? Colt leaned forward and stared up at the still dark sky.
Walk, I suppose. We can load up as many weapons as we can carry and bury the rest. Then we'll head southeast. We should hit Lake Tahoe sooner or later. Maybe one of the small towns Harvey talked about in between.
Melody glanced at her brother. How far is it to Lake Tahoe? He scratched his head.
At least 100 miles.
100 miles? The matte painted metal of the military vehicle closed in around her, and Melody struggled to breathe. We're planning to walk 100 miles to get to some lake we've never been to, in the hopes there will be something there for us? Her brother turned sheepish.
When you put it like that...
What are we supposed to eat or drink on the way? No one said anything for a moment. At last, Danny broke the silence. Do you have a better idea? Melody blinked. Do you? No. That's why I'm asking. Since you're so upset about the plan, is there something else you'd rather do? Melody sagged against the seat. She wished she could say yes, but every option she could think of wasn't any better. No. Then stop complaining. Danny waited until Melody met her heavy gaze. The situation sucks, we all know it, but I'm not giving up.
Neither am I.
Colt flashed a tight smile in agreement. Melody wished she could share in their optimism, but all she could think about were the negatives. No food, no water, no shelter. Her neighbors were dead. Larkin was gone. How could they hike 100 miles and not die on the way? She asked another question. How will we know which way to go?
I can land, Nav. Between the sun and the stars, we can head in the general direction.
Colt scratched at his head.
From what I remember, Tahoe's huge. We won't miss it.
You really think that's the best option? He nodded.
For right now, yes.
Melody thought about Larkin out there on his own. No idea how to find them in the miles of forest. She thought about all the what-ifs and the hope he'd given her.
He'll find us.
She cut Colt a glance. Easy for you to say. Lottie squirmed, sticking her nose out to sniff at Harvey's body. Melody pulled her back. We need to bury Harvey and say a few words. Melody paused to maintain composure. We might have left Gloria and Will out to the elements, but I won't do that to Harvey, too. He deserves a burial. They all deserve a memorial. To be remembered. She didn't wait for anyone to respond. Grabbing the door handle, Melody jerked with all her might. The door opened, and the cold morning air whipped her face. It took Doug and Colt an hour to dig a deep enough grave with the shovel and pickaxe stored underneath of the Humvee. The pair of them dragged Harvey into the ditch, and Melody straightened his clothes before Doug filled the hole. Melody stood at the makeshift cross Colt had fashioned out of a branch and closed her eyes. She tried to think of the right words to say. Something full of meaning and purpose that would do justice to the Wilkins family. She opened her eyes. I'm sorry, Harvey. I'm sorry for all of the mistakes of the past month, all the missed opportunities and sacrifices, all the hesitation and doubt. I'm sorry we failed your wife and grandson. Most of all, I'm sorry you died like this, running from strangers after the whole world turned upside down. Doug reached out and squeezed her shoulder. There wasn't anything else Melody could say. What was the point of sharing her memories of a family that would soon live only inside the minds of a handful of people? Colt cleared his throat. I owe Harvey Wilkins my life. If it weren't for his choice to pull me into his basement, I would be dead. Danny, too. He glanced at her and nodded. Harvey gave up his own safety for a stranger, and I will never forget that generosity. Part of Melody wanted to scream, beat her fists against Colt's chest, and blame him for everything that happened. But what good would it do? What good would anything do? It was only a matter of time before they all died. They were fooling themselves if they thought Lake Tahoe was a reality. She thrust Lottie into her brother's arms before walking away from the grave. Melody, where are you going? She answered her brother without turning around. I need a few minutes alone. Melody knew now how hopeless this powerless future would be. This moment, standing around with two strangers and the only family she had left in the world, was the best it would ever get. Her hair clung to her scalp in ratty, greasy clumps. Her jeans were stained with dirt and grime and a dead man's blood. She didn't know if the ring of black beneath her nails was filth or a permanent stain, but it didn't matter. The old Melody Harper, who loved to curl up on a couch and watch Hallmark Channel movies with a pint of ice cream, was dead. The animals she cared for at the vet clinic, all dead. Just like her parents. Just like the Wilkinses. Larkin was never coming back. No man would ever look at her and see the future again. Maybe a quick romp on a dirty floor or the leaf-strewn forest. But a wife? The mother of someone's children? Forget it. All the dreams she thought would still come true. All the things she hadn't crossed off her list. Gone in the blink of an eye. Maybe the power going out was punishment. Was this comeuppance for a world of frivolity and leisure? Was this some twisted retribution? Melody walked without seeing. She didn't know where she was going. She planted her feet one after the other in the lumpy, dank earth. Thoughts of life and death and the meaning of it all swirled inside her head, more real than the forest all around. She stumbled over a hidden log on the forest floor. The ground rose up, full of branches and leaves and broken twigs. Melody thrust her arms out to break her fall. Only there wasn't any more ground. Her hands led the way as she tumbled off a hidden ledge. As her body hit the first outcrop of rocks, her ribs crunched and splintered, and Melody screamed.
Chapter 23. Danny. Northern California Forest, 3 p.m. Danny bent over and sucked in a lungful of air. They had been searching for Melody for hours. At some point, they had to accept reality. She stood up and unscrewed the cap on one of the few bottles of water they managed to salvage from the truck. A splash of water hit her cracked lips. Crap. She shoved the empty bottle in the back of the Humvee and groaned. Spending their precious energy circling out in wider and wider arcs around the Humvee to search for Melody wasn't getting them anywhere. They could all end up dead before too long. As if he'd read her thoughts, Doug called out, "We're not giving up. I can't live without my sister." Sometime over the last 6 hours, Doug aged a decade. Gone were his wide-open eyes and easy smile. In their place, a haggard, broken man who couldn't admit what Colt and Danny already grasped. Melody was dead. Or dying. Lottie yipped at Doug's feet, and he scooped the hungry little dog up. "I know you miss her, Lot. I do, too." He ruffled her fur. "We'll find her, I promise." He set Lottie down, but the little dog only pawed at his leg. Danny stated the obvious. "She's hungry." Doug cut her a glance. "We're all hungry. Someone needs to look for water and food. We've got a million guns. We should be able to shoot something." "I'm not doing anything except search for my sister." "You'd rather die out here then, because that's what'll happen if we don't find something to eat." "Enough." Colt broke through a thicket of scrub brush, and entered the small clearing where Doug and Danny stood. "Arguing will get us nowhere." He set his rifle on the ground and stretched, wincing as his back bent. Danny didn't know how the man even managed to stay upright after the crash he survived. "Danny, how about you go on a hunt for water? There's got to be a stream or river nearby. They snake all through this area." "What about Melody?" Colt turned to Doug. "You and I can keep searching. We'll increase the radius, fan out from here and look for any signs of her." "She could be miles away by now. Or dead." But Danny didn't offer the most logical answer. Melody wasn't cut out for a hike in the forest. Without food or water and no concept of direction, she didn't stand a chance. Even if she were only lost, the chances of finding her now, after searching for hours, had to be slim. First Gran, then Gloria and Will, Harvey, and most likely Melody, too. At some point over the course of the night before, Danny turned it all off. Her emotions, hope, any thought or feeling that wasn't tied to her own base need to survive. Danny was ready to call off the search right now and hit the road. She wasn't going to die out in the middle of the California forest, searching for a needle in a haystack. Glancing up at the sun, she thought it over. If they weren't any closer to finding Melody by sunset, that was it. Danny would stay the night with Colt and Doug, but she would hightail it out of there first thing in the morning. At some point, those men from the road would come looking for them, and she planned to be miles away by the time they found the Humvee. She headed over to the vehicle and dragged two empty jugs from the back. "If I find water, I'll clean these out and fill them up." "Good. Head for lower ground. You might find a stream tucked between two ridges or a small fall on the slope of one of these hills." Colt picked up his rifle and motioned to a nearby tree. "Mark your path so you can get back. A notch on a tree every 50 steps."
"I can do that."
"Good." Colt turned to Doug. "Let's restart the search. We've got 3 solid hours of daylight left. Let's make the most of it." Danny watched the pair of them head out with Lottie trailing behind. The poor little dog would go the way of her owner if Danny didn't come back with at least something to drink. She grabbed a strip of rope from the Humvee and tied the jugs together before looping them over her shoulder along with a rifle. As she traipsed through the underbrush, her worn-out sneakers slipped and skidded. The jugs banged against each other in a hollow echo, and Danny slowed down. She couldn't listen for gurgling water if she couldn't hear anything but her own clumsy movements. On and on she walked, slow enough to catch the sound of birds as they landed in the treetops above, and squirrels jumping from one branch to the next. If she were a better shot, she might be able to kill one or two for a makeshift dinner. Squirrel couldn't be any worse than the mystery meat from her old school cafeteria. They had more than enough ammo now. Maybe it would be worth a try. She unslung the rifle from her shoulder and positioned the jugs so they stopped colliding as she moved. With slow steps, she eased forward, looking and listening for an animal to kill. Hunting had never been her thing, but desperate times called for desperate measures. Danny was done running and hiding and hoping to survive by being invisible. She would own every decision from here on out. She would live by choice, not by default. The sound of rustling leaves stopped Danny mid-step. She twisted in place. A deer stood no more than 20 feet away, ears pricked as it spotted her. Danny eased into position. If she shot it, they would have meat for days. Saliva pooled in her mouth and she swallowed. As she stepped back into a crouch, a twig snapped. The deer spooked and ran. Crap! Danny hustled after it, skidding and slipping down a muddy embankment. I can't lose it. Her shoes squelched in the mud, and Danny almost fell time and again. The jugs banged together on her back in a staccato drumbeat, and sweat beaded along her brow. She couldn't slow down. She would catch the animal
and bring something to the table. The deer crashed through brush, and Danny caught glimpses of its black tail in the dappled afternoon sun. Come on, just give me a clear shot. With the rifle pinned to her shoulder, Danny ran as fast as possible, dodging leaves and branches. But the deer always stayed just out of range. She couldn't catch it. Danny slowed, huffing and puffing out her exhaustion as the gap between her and the deer increased. A minute later, she lost sight of it in the trees. Danny stopped. Blood thundered in her ears like a thousand tiny hooves. She sucked in one breath after another, panting as she leaned against the nearest tree. All that work for nothing. She expended a ton of energy, and what did it get her? More hunger and thirst, and a longer trek back to Colt. After a few minutes, her breathing slowed and Danny looked around her. While chasing the deer, she'd skidded down a gentle slope. The pine trees of the roadside gave way to the big leafy varieties with branches that blocked out the fading sun. She stopped to listen. Beneath the racing of her heart and the twittering of random birds, a constant rumble lurked. It couldn't be a train or a highway or a distant airport. Those things were long gone. No. It had to be a river. But what direction? Danny closed her eyes. The sound bounced off the higher grades of land, echoing on all sides. She turned in a slow circle, trying to place the source. She couldn't be sure, but her best guess was the path the deer had taken. She glanced back the way she had come. How long had she run? Would she be able to find her way back? Danny marked a tree where she stood with a double notch to remind her of where she stopped. It might not be enough, but what choice did she have? She couldn't backtrack now when the promise of a river lay out of sight. Setting off in the direction of the deer, Danny kept one eye on the setting sun. If she stayed out much longer, she wouldn't make it back to the Humvee before dark. Hiking in the pitch black of night wasn't a welcome thought. Danny picked up the pace, stopping every now and then to mark a tree or bend a branch. As she stepped through a tangled bramble, the ground dipped, then she stumbled. The jugs clattered on her back. The rifle slipped off her shoulder, and Danny scrambled to grab the nearest tree. Her hand slipped on the sapling, but she dug her nails into a branch, clinging on as her feet slipped out from under her. Leaves tore from the branch as she slid another foot. A ravine. Her feet dangled off the edge of a steep drop, and the sound of a river rushed up from below. Water. With one hand still holding on to the tree, and one thrust into the dirt for purchase, Danny eased to sit on the soft ledge. If she used her backside as an anchor and the trees as checks, she could make it to the bottom. Climbing up would be a massive undertaking. She glanced up at the sky. Making it back before dark would be impossible. If she wanted to reach the river, she would need to camp there all night. Danny chewed on her lip. Could she do that? Could she figure out a way to survive at the edge of a rushing stream all alone? Her parched lips cracked with her answer. She didn't have a choice. Water was the difference between life and death. Danny reached for the next tree and slid 3 feet down the hill. Gravel and sticks and pine cones rumbled past her. She reached for another tree. Foot by foot, she made her agonizing descent toward the river. The rushing water grew louder and louder, and the sun dipped lower as she trekked. At last, her feet landed hard on the bank, and Danny laughed out loud. 8 feet wide and crystal clear, the stream beckoned. Danny dumped her gear on the ground and rushed up to the water. Falling to her knees on the sandy shore, she scooped up the precious liquid in her hands and drank until she couldn't swallow another drop. Only when she reached her fill did she lean back. Oh no. It can't be.
10 yards downstream, a body floated half in the water. The other half lay tangled and broken among